So, I have reached the conclusion that I am done with replay. I'm done with replay in its entirety. If you want to give teams two challenges or a challenge that they can use at any point during the game, no, you know what? That's better. Give both team one, and then if you get your challenge correct, you get another one, but that's it. And there is no booth reviews, no nothing. Because the calls that are being missed and not overturned, and the calls that are being overturned that have no business being overturned throughout football, it's not just college. I'm bringing it up because obviously we do a Big Ten-centered college football podcast, but it's all throughout football. I'm done. I watched that Ohio State game, that Ohio State-Penn State game in its entirety. It was garbage. I mean, there are three calls in that game that go to replay and get overturned when it's like, what are they looking at that is giving them clear and conclusive evidence that that play should be overturned? If you look at a play, and see, I think that's where people start to really fall off the wagon, is they look at the replay and they think, oh yeah, I'm pretty sure that should be incomplete, or that's not enough to overturn it. Clear and conclusive has always been the rule. And I have gone from the biggest advocate for a replay system to, if we went down to each team just got one challenge and that's all you have, so use it really smart throughout a football game, I would be totally fine with that because I'm done.
That's not a bad take, honestly. And there have been other people in the media industry who have brought this up. Namely, I'm referring to Nick Wright, if anyone knows who he is. He's a Fox Sports guy. Typically, basketball is his thing. And he's talked about this in the NBA with these painstaking reviews that take so much time. And he'll hop on his shows afterwards and say, like, for the history of time, this play has been out of bounds off the Lakers, like Grizzlies ball. But you spend 10 minutes looking to see if it tipped off the shoelace of Ja Morant, right? And it's just this painstaking process. But to bring it back to football, I think we're too far in to get rid of replay entirely. Like, the toothpaste is out of the tube. You can't put it back in. But I do think it's just not being used in its entirety. Like you said, there are way too many things that are like easy, boom, you see it on a replay, you're like, oh yeah, this needs to be switched, overturned, and it takes them freaking forever. And they always say, like, well, it's because we're figuring out the clock and where to spot the ball. That shouldn't take that much time. It shouldn't. And you're also right. Like in the Ohio State game where I believe the receiver, it was ruled a fumble.
A fumble on the field. It was ruled a fumble on the field.
Correct. It was ruled a fumble on the field and overturned. I didn't think that was worth being overturned. I thought there was nothing.
And Penn State recovered it and ran it back for a touchdown.
They did. They did. So I agree with you to a point here. The thing that frustrates me is it's so easy for me on my couch to watch the TV and Fox shows a replay of something and I'm like, oh yeah, here, they got it wrong. It needs to be switched right there. And I can do it in 5 seconds. And we have a freaking headquarters for Big Ten officials that can't get it figured out in 5 minutes.
And then you have a game, a play in the first touchdown of the game in the Oregon-Michigan game was clearly just never caught. The ball hits the guy in the chest and then bounces off the ground back up into his arms. No review. No review. Don't even look at it. The system is so broken, I'm ready for there not to be a system. That is truly the point that I've reached. And we get into these replays, especially ones that happen inside of the final 4 minutes of a game, where they're breaking up the game. There's no game flow because they're already putting so many commercial, you know, spots and stuff like that into those areas, where you've got a team on driving down the field, and they have a play where, oh, okay, no, it's second and one. Oh no, but actually he might have gotten the first down. But we got to stop it. We got to review. And it's like, it's worse for that team for you to review the play than to just let them keep rolling, let them keep going, let them keep the defense huffing and puffing. It takes away from, it has gone from, because it's all about viewing experience, right? Everything they do in the game is tailored to making the game a better viewing experience. If you don't believe that, I'm sorry, you're just wrong, because that is always what football has been about. And it's not, it's no longer creating a better viewing experience for me as Correct. A fan.
They thought that review, making the product and the result more accurate, would lead to a better experience for fans. And you're right, it's done the exact opposite. And I think as a whole too, NFL and college included, football has become an over-officiated sport. The rules are far too intricate. They're trying to make subjective calls not subjective calls, and they're trying to make objective calls subjective calls.
I mean, the NFL implementing a hip drop tackle rule.
Right.
What are we doing?
Right.
I mean, come on.
I think we have way too many. I also think there are way too many rules that apply to situations pre-snap and post-play. 99% of rules and penalty calls need to be while the game is actually happening. We need to get rid of so much of this procedural crap. Like, I'm obviously not talking about false start and offsides, but so much of the, oh, did this receiver move an inch forward in his stance so to cause like a, you know, illegal motion penalty, or was this guy's helmet not intersecting with the numbers and the offensive lineman next to him? Like, we need to get rid of so many of these procedural penalties pre-snap and post-play.
The problem is, the problem with that is, and I'm just going to make a quick point about it, is that those are put in place to keep the offense from having such an unbelievable advantage schematically that no one would be able to play defense. If you just allowed offensive linemen to line up virtually in the backfield, no one would ever be able to rush the passer if you didn't make them line up on the line of scrimmage.
I would say you have a point if there weren't so many other calls that already give the offense so much advantage. Like,
right.
Like, third and
right,
five,
but that would be
the passer.
If you made a rule where the tackles don't have to have their head at least to the waist of the center, they would just line up next to the quarterback in the backfield. That is what they would do.
Maybe that was a bad example, but
yeah. I get what you're saying. It's just become so convoluted that the average fan sees a lot of these penalties. Like, for instance, the illegal formation. People see illegal formation and they're like, okay, I don't know what that was for. And then every now and then, you know, like Tony Romo or Tom Brady will try and explain to you what happened. And listen, it's a complicated game. It's a very, very complicated game. But to get back to the original point, it's just the replay system for me has overcomplicated the game to a point where it is not upping my viewership experience of the game. When the NFL created that, you know, expedited replay, which I do think that NCAA has now too, that if you can do that, if a play is so easily overturned that you can do the expedited replay, great. Other than that, you get one challenge per game. One. And I'm serious. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
I don't hate it. Well, if you love Big Ten football as much as we do, you are in the right place. Welcome to Big Banter, everybody. Follow us on Twitter at B1G Banter Pod, Instagram at B1G Banter. Make sure you follow and subscribe wherever you listen, on Apple or Spotify. And we have a jam-packed show today. You know why? Because Tuesday was a historical day for this country. It was the first reveal of the college football 12-team playoff bracket. That's what happened on Thursday. That's what I was glued to my TV for. We're going to talk about it. We're obviously going to talk about where the Big Ten falls in that, what this means going forward. Did they get it right? Did they get it wrong? Is it even worth complaining about right now, or is all the dust going to settle itself? We'll get into Week 10 review and Week 11 picks too, but as promised, college football playoff bracket reveal. So I'm going to give you guys just the flat rankings, 1 through 12, but because of auto bids and conference champs getting first round buys, 1 through 12 is not how this thing is going to go. Like 1 through 4 are not getting first round buys. It depends on who the conference champs are. So obviously what they're doing right now, they're just ranking the teams 1 through 12 and then projecting based off of those rankings who is going to win the conference and giving those teams the first round buys right now. So
the people want to know what the votes were the votes tallied, and was the correct decision made. The people want to know.
We need to go see the exit polls for the athletic directors walking out of the booths when they were voting here. We're still waiting for all that to come in. We've got about 97% of the votes, so we're close here.
Why the disrespect for Indiana? Because they're a Big Ten school and not an SEC school. End of conversation.
We're gonna have to throw BYU in this conversation too, because BYU is undefeated at 8-0, and I believe has multiple ranked wins. Okay, never mind. Let's get into this thing. We'll start at 12. At number 12, Boise State at 7-1. At number 11, you have Alabama. At number 10, you have Notre Dame. At number 9, you have undefeated BYU. At number 8, you have undefeated Indiana. We will get into the disrespect here shortly. At number 7, you have Tennessee. At 6, you have Penn State. At 5, you have Texas. Now we get into the top 4. Number 4 is Miami, undefeated Miami at 9-0. 3 is Georgia at 7-1. And occupying your top 2 spots are two Big Ten teams. At number 2 is Ohio State, and number 1 is Oregon. That's your 12-1. On the outside looking in, your first 4 out, if you want to phrase them that way, get into a little bit of March Madness vibes. Number 13 is SMU, 14 is Texas A&M, 15 is LSU, and 16 is Ole Miss. A lot of this is going to change, but that's where it stands right now. So let's get into what the bracket would look like if the season was over today. Your first round buys would go to number 1 seed Oregon, your Big Ten champ. Number 2 seed Georgia, your SEC champ. Number 3 seed Miami, your ACC champ. And number 4 seed BYU, your Big 12 champ. And this is what the matchups would be. The 7-10 matchup would be Penn State hosting Notre Dame. What a wild... The more I'm going to get into these matchups, the more we talk about this, the more everyone listening to this should be salivating over the 12-team playoff. The 8-9 matchup, Indiana hosting Tennessee. In the 5-12 matchup, it would be Ohio State hosting Boise. And in the 6-11 matchup, it would be Texas hosting Alabama. That is how the bracket shows up right now. And to Ethan's point, the first thing we're going to get into, a common topic of discussion, even amongst McElroy and Reese and the boys who are actually revealing this, the disrespect shown towards Indiana and BYU. These are two Power Four conference undefeated teams that just in the flat out rankings are both ranked outside of the top 5, outside of the top 7, with 5 teams with one loss ranked above them. So well, Ethan, get into it.
And another thing is take the helmets off. You're telling me that Boise State's loss against number one ranked Oregon shouldn't put them ahead of a team like Notre Dame, who lost to Northern Illinois at home? It doesn't make any sense.
The Notre Dame one I understand a little bit because Notre Dame has a better win against on the road at Texas A&M, right? And Boise State will never have a win that comes close to that. But let's talk about Indiana and BYU specifically.
Texas A&M just got boat raced by South Carolina.
They did. Yeah, they did. But Texas A&M's a ranked win regardless.
I suppose so. The one time that it is actually appropriate for you to put a team above another team that they have beaten is when they have more losses. Like Georgia is currently ranked above Alabama because Alabama's lost more games. That's correct. Fine. That makes sense to me. But there's so many things that this committee does that do not make any sense. It's just, I don't know. You know what? I've said this for so many years that by the final week, it normally always sorts itself out. Last year kind of made a lot of people lose confidence in that because of the fact that Florida State was undefeated and didn't get in.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, kind of absurd. That had never happened in the history of the playoff. You know, Power Five conference champ undefeated,
yeah,
missing the playoff. The fact that it's 12 teams, something is going to happen at the end of this season. Somebody's going to get in, and people are just going to be like, "What do you mean? It's going to happen. We are going to look at it at the end of the year and be like, how?" Please, how?
People are even complaining already about SMU being
the first
team out because they just beat an undefeated Pitt.
Yep.
And I believe they have one more win on the season against a currently ranked team.
They only have one loss, correct?
SMU only has one loss. Yep, they are 8-1. Yeah. But okay, let's center this back on Indiana.
Yeah. It doesn't surprise me at all. It doesn't surprise me at all. Are they wrong?
Do you agree?
No. In no scenario, not one singular scenario, even if they had the schedule, the same strength of schedule that Indiana has had to this point, I don't care if it was Vanderbilt, which would be the comp here, right? With Indiana in the SEC.
Sure.
Vanderbilt would probably be that comp. They would be ranked in the top five. Tell me I'm wrong. Please tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong. I fully believe if this was an SEC team, they're ranked in the top five.
And they have – I can't believe I'm saying this. Indiana has not only started this year, it's 9-0 now, correct? 9-0? They're not only 9-0. They have beat the spread. They're 9-0 against the spread. They're 9-0 against the spread this year.
That's the thing the committee is not taking into account. Like they are looking at Indiana's schedule and saying, well, they have no wins over any currently ranked teams.
Yeah, they've had multiple single digit spreads of teams that they have beat by more than 20.
Right. And I think you take a team with Indiana's record and their margin of victory, let's compare them to Penn State. Penn State, with the loss to Ohio State, Penn State also now has zero wins against currently ranked teams. When they beat Illinois at the time, Illinois was a ranked team, no longer the case. So now you have Penn State and Indiana, who both do not have wins against currently ranked teams. Penn State has had much more trouble with the opponents that they've played. Let's just cite a few. A 7-point win against Bowling Green, a 14-point win against Illinois, a what is this, 16-point win against UCLA, a 3-point win against USC. Illinois is blowing out every single team they play, including a Nebraska team
that gave
Ohio State fits.
Indiana.
What did I say?
Illinois.
My bad. Indiana is blowing out every team they play, including a Nebraska team that gave Ohio State fits. I think Indiana should be ranked above Penn State.
There's not an argument to be made to the contrary. There's not. And it stems from the fact that they – and this is crazy, but they played a game against Ohio State where all of the mistakes in that game were made by Ohio State. And Penn State, at home, still found a way to lose.
Correct.
Every mistake that was made in that game that Ohio State, if you would have said before the game started, they're going to have a fumble at the goal line that goes out of bounds and is a touchback for Penn State, and they're going to throw a pick six. Nobody is telling you Ohio State's winning that game.
Right.
Nobody.
Right.
And if you put Indiana and if you put Indiana and Penn State on a neutral field right now, I'm picking Indiana to win.
I think I would too.
So do with that what you will. It's going to fix itself. There's a lot more games to be played. But see, now that we have these new conference realignments where you don't have an East and a West, this is where it causes problems. And we had a discussion about this preseason. And I brought up the point to you guys, and to your credit, you were really the one who kind of latched onto it and was like, that could bring up some serious issues, was about the fact that these teams not playing each other during the regular season, we're going to get to the playoff and not everybody can make it to the Big Ten championship game. And right. We're going to get to where it comes time to select teams for the playoff. And you're going to have teams with basically identical records and identical resumes. And what do you do?
You are. What do you do? Yeah. I think BYU is being disrespected light years more than Indiana is. Because at least with Indiana, even though I think it's wrong, you could point to their schedule and say they have no wins against the current ranked team. BYU is 8-0 with two of those wins against currently ranked teams. SMU at 13 and Kansas State at 19. Those are two wins against top 20 teams, and they're an undefeated Power Four conference team, and you have them ranked at 9. If you look at their actual strength of record ranking, BYU is at 3. And the College Football Playoff Committee has them at 9.
There's no rhyme or reason to it. A lot of this stuff is going to work itself out. Let's pause and say that. But do I have faith? If the question that you're posing to me is, do you have faith that the committee is going to get the 12 teams correct for the playoff? My answer is absolutely not.
And because it's a 12-team playoff, I think you rely more on the committee's judgment with a 12-team playoff than you do with the 4-team. The 4-team is very clear cut for the most part because of conference champions.
There were very few years like last year where it was like,
correct,
oh my goodness, we have to leave out an undefeated team because they lost their quarterback. Happened one time in the playoff era.
I think the only two times in the playoff era that you can point to, I think the committee may have gotten it wrong, is last year with Florida State, which again, an anomaly of a situation. And then I personally thought in the first year of the playoff that they should have included Baylor over Ohio State. But Ohio State went on to win the whole thing, so got proved wrong anyways. But I think those are the only two moments in the 4-team playoff that not everyone could go in and say, I know exactly who the 4 teams are going to be tonight, and I can tell you what order they're going to be into. But the 12-team, like you said, you're going to be splitting hairs when you get down to 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And you are relying on the judgment of these individuals who are putting these rankings together. And based on looking at these initial ones, I couldn't trust them to pick Margot Robbie out of a lineup of men. Something I was happy that they did is put Ohio State at 2 over Georgia. I thought Ohio State deserved to be 2. I thought they might show up at 3. I thought Georgia might get the SEC bump, especially after their convincing win over Texas. But I'm glad they put Ohio State at 2. I'm surprised Miami is behind Georgia and Ohio State. That's a 9-0 team that, yes, they've played some close games, but again, powerful.
They played multiple very, very close games against teams that are not good enough to be losing those types of close games too. So the Miami thing, I will give the playoff committee a pass on, because you could argue that Miami should have a loss to Virginia Tech. That play getting overturned, and maybe the committee looked at that. That play getting overturned is still a crime in my eyes.
Now, I think you can look at Texas's resume now, excuse me, and you can start to poke some holes in this, because what gave Texas their big boost early in the year was their win against Michigan and how emphatically they won it. And you look back now and you're like, well, Michigan is not nearly the team that we thought they were at the time. Yeah. So Texas is also a team that Oklahoma's not ranked in the top 25. Michigan's not ranked in the top 25. Is Vanderbilt still ranked in the top 25, or no? Are they out now? Vanderbilt is also out.
Out, yeah.
So Texas is also a one-loss team with 0 wins over a currently ranked, current top 25 ranked team.
Yeah, and the loss that they had to Georgia, I mean, Georgia dominated that football game.
Yes, they dominated even more so than the score said, and the score was a gap of 15. They got beat 30-15. So I think Texas is being inflated. I think Penn State is being inflated. Personally, I thought it was a travesty to rank Penn State where they were at 3 before the Ohio State game. But even more so now, I think I do not think Penn State is a top 6 team in the country.
I don't think Penn State is a top 10 team in the country.
Oof, that's a take. I might think that Penn State is a top 10 team in the country.
If you want me to find you 10 teams that I think would beat Penn State on a neutral field, I will absolutely do it for you.
Can I name some teams and you tell me yes or no?
Yes, go quickly.
Oregon?
Yes.
Ohio State is obviously a yes.
Yes.
Georgia?
Yes.
Miami?
Yes.
Texas?
Yes.
Tennessee?
Yes.
Indiana?
Yes.
Alabama?
Yes.
Notre Dame?
Yes.
We got to find one more team here. BYU? SMU? Texas A&M? Any of those?
No. Maybe LSU.
Maybe LSU. Okay, yeah. So you've got them floating at 10, right on the border.
I would say,
because we you said yes to 9 teams clearly, and then some 50-50s on some others.
Notre Dame, you said. Mm-hmm. I think if they played Clemson on a neutral field, Clemson would win.
Okay, so yeah, you got them outside the top 10 then.
Yeah. Clemson losing in the fashion that they did. It's kind of wild, but
yeah, that was wild.
It was a bad game.
Any other takeaways from these rankings? Any other initial reactions?
No, my biggest takeaway from the whole thing, in all seriousness, is that I don't trust the playoff committee to get a 12-team playoff correct. Because when you come out and your initial rankings look like that, that's a joke. It's a joke.
It is a joke. It is a joke. And the guys on the broadcast kept saying the same thing that we were, that, oh, it'll settle itself out. It'll settle itself out, blah, blah, blah. But like we've just pointed out, the bottom 2 to 3 teams here are going to have to rely on the logical thinking of this committee to look at the resumes and make judgment calls, because that's how college football works. The rankings are judgment calls. And looking at this, if I was a BYU, if I was an Indiana, if I was an SMU, I would be very, very nervous about my playoff chances because of what these initial rankings show. Like Indiana, with one loss, we think Indiana should be comfortable, but they're undefeated and they're at 8. Like, what
if Indiana does not get in as a one loss Big Ten team? There will be riots.
Well, think about this though. Like, I agree with you, and I agree they should get in. But okay, let's look at the rest of Indiana's schedule.
Oh God, there isn't a scenario that, listen, I still firmly believe if you go 11-1, there is a 99.5% chance that you are in the playoff.
But if Indiana goes 11-1, let's assume one loss is to Ohio State. That means they still do not have a win over a top 25 ranked team. Let's say Alabama wins this weekend against a current 15 ranked LSU. I think two loss Alabama, based on what these initial rankings show, Indiana's only 3 spots ahead of Alabama.
Yeah, but there are other teams that Indiana's getting in ahead of before Alabama.
Not if they don't lose.
No, I'm saying, like, right, but there are going to be other teams that lose. There are some of those teams that play very, very big games. So it would take a wild scenario for Indiana to go 11-1. We don't even need to talk about that. We really don't.
Let me just lay this out quickly, okay? If these four teams underneath Indiana, if these five teams, let's say just four teams, win out, BYU, Notre Dame, Alabama, and Boise, and it's very realistic that those four teams win out and Indiana goes 11-1, I think Indiana's out.
I disagree. Wholeheartedly disagree. Because Indiana's one loss is going to be weighted as a road loss to the number two team in the country.
I hear what you're saying. I just don't have confidence in it, given what the rankings look like right now. And that's really the point I'm trying to make.
It's also not going to – one of those teams will lose. So the odds of that happening are infinitesimal. So it's – we'll see. If it happens, we'll have a conversation about it. But I do not foresee that being a possibility at this point.
Okay, so let's get away from the judgment calls and talk about what happened on the field this weekend. We're going to go to the big one. Ohio State goes into Happy Valley, beats Penn State again, 20-13 on their home turf. Penn State got off to a hot start, taking a 10-zip lead in this one, courtesy of a pick six, and then proceeded to give up 20, or to lose in the rest of the game, 20-3. And if you're doing the math in your head, you are correct. Penn State did not score an offensive touchdown in this game. You think, well, did they just do all their work inside or between the 20s? No. They got into the red zone. Actually, they were inside of the 5-yard line twice, and they failed to come away with points. Yes, I'm going to say that again. They were inside the 5 twice and failed to come away with points. One of them was right before the half, where a receiver had a chance to make a play on a ball in the end zone, bounced off his chest, and Ohio State intercepted it going into halftime. They came away with nothing there. Then they had a 4th-and-goal situation where, again, they failed, came away with 0 points. A complete lack of execution on Penn State's part in this game. And watching this, I did not feel like Ohio State played their best game. Specifically Will Howard. Will Howard had the pick six to start. Then Will Howard fumbled the ball out the back of the Penn State end zone for a touchback. He did not play a good game by any stretch. And this was supposed to be his revenge game. He's from Pennsylvania and talked in the days leading up about how he felt disrespected because he wanted to go there his whole life. And this was kind of his chance to prove to them that he belonged in a Penn State uniform as their starting quarterback. Did not have a great game. But the Ohio State defense showed up, and quite honestly, the lack of execution from Penn State's offense showed up, which was extremely disappointing given the new OC and this explosive offense that they're supposed to have.
I'll tell you what coach isn't new on that team and is responsible for the worst record as a team that is considered a good team year after year after year, nobody is worse than Penn State in games against top 25 opponents. James Franklin must be fired. Unless they make a run in the playoff, which I find very unlikely because I just told you, I think there are at minimum 9 teams better than they are. He's got to go. He must. It's just you, at some point, you get fatigue to the point where you just cannot stick with the same guy. Even though he's bringing you quote-unquote success, it's like, you know when they talk about how it would be better if your situation was slightly worse because you'd be motivated to change it? That is where Penn State is right now. If their situation was slightly worse, if he was losing some games to like unranked teams and stuff like that, it would be better for Penn State because they would be more apt to move on and get a new head coach. They are in purgatory. They are in absolute purgatory. And there's no end in sight. Alex, there's no end in sight. There has never been an opportunity better to end the suffering than that game right there. It was set up for them on a tee. Getting out to that 10-0 lead with the pick six, and you're at home. You're at home with the 10-0 lead. Then you have first and goal from inside the 5 twice and end up with 0 points. Well, goodbye. Goodbye. Losing that game is so wholeheartedly unacceptable. If you are a Penn State fan, goodbye, James Franklin. And I'm not even saying it in like a hyperbolic, like, oh, this is a hot take type of way. It's not a PJ Fleck thing. It's not anything like that. It is as real as I can possibly be. He should be fired.
He should. I agree wholeheartedly. And it's not like we're holding James Franklin to an unreasonable bar for Penn State. Like, we're not saying he needs to be in national title contention every other year, right? But at Penn State, you should have made the 4-team playoff once. You should beat Ohio State more than once in your entire coaching tenure. And this was supposed to be the year. This was the year that, like, okay, Drew Aller has learned, he's mature, we got a new coordinator in here to get more out of the offense. We have, you know, this two-headed monster at running back. We've got a great pass rusher, kind of hybrid defender in Abdul Carter. Like, we have the dudes. This is our year. And once again, in key situations, not only do they not execute, it looks like they just have no concept of what it takes to win these big games in close moments. And adding another layer to this, there were moments in this game, multiple, where they failed in terms of the, you just got to be a big boy and play big boy football and win in big boy football moments. And I want to point out a few. Coming into this game, Ohio State on the season had a 50% conversion rate on third down and 3 yards or less. 50% on the season coming into this game, third down and 3 yards or less. Against Penn State, 3 for 3. And it was actually worse than that because they had multiple third down and 3 conversions on their last drive of the game. Speaking of the last drive, so this is just after Penn State turns it over on downs at the Ohio State 1 because they failed to get into the end zone. This is the drive with 10 minutes left. Sorry, not 10 minutes. With 4:40 left on the clock. This is the drive that Ohio State went on to close this game and win it, okay? A run for 4 yards, a run for 9 yards, a run for 6 yards, a run for 15 yards, a run for 6 yards, a run for 2 yards, a run for 3 yards, a run for 7 yards, a run for no gain, a run for 7 yards, and then they kneeled it out. Penn State did exactly what Michigan did to Penn State last year and ran it down their throats when they needed to have the game, and they had absolutely zero issue in doing it. There was no resistance whatsoever.
I have to issue an apology, an official Ethan apology. I have to do it because I made a heinous statement before this game took place, and I'm ashamed. But you know what? I'm going to own up to it, and I'm going to be a man. I said that Penn State was better in the trenches than Ohio State. That could not be further from the truth after what I witnessed on Saturday.
But they should have been. Ohio State had
No, I know. I'm bringing up that point. Ohio State was missing multiple offensive linemen. They played fantastic in that game, or at least they looked like they did. And then on the defensive side of the ball, they were beating the offensive linemen like a drum in the run game, especially in critical situations, which you just pointed out, where the game was on the line and everything mattered. I made a terrible, terrible take by saying that. Ohio State wasn't just better in the trenches. They were eons better in the trenches.
Just some other mind-boggling things from Penn State in this game. Their tight end, Tyler Warren, was their leading rusher on the game for 47 yards. And their running back, Nick Singleton, was their leading receiver. Having your tight end be your leading rusher and your running back be your leading receiver, not sustainable. Cannot do it. That is not how you win games against a team like Ohio State. And just to get even worse and pour more dirt on the pile in terms of their red zone performance, we talked about their goal to go situations. Were they for 0-for with no points and a turnover? They had 4 red zone trips in this game, total of 6 points. 4 red zone trips and 2 field goals. Absolutely unacceptable.
I mean, there's you get one of these games every like 5 years where you watch it and you just go, yep, he doesn't have it and he never will. And that was what this game was for James Franklin. To be fair, Jim Harbaugh had one of those. But Jim Harbaugh hadn't been coaching Michigan for 48 years. James Franklin has been at Penn State for a long, long time now. The Joe Pa era was a long time ago. He's been there for a long time. And he's now, what, 1-10 against Ohio State?
He is 1-something. It's 1 win. I don't know how many losses, but he is 1-something against Ohio State, and he has not beaten a top-5 opponent since 2016. It's been 8 years. 8 years since he's beaten a top-5 opponent at Penn State University. Ethan is waving to the camera as we speak. I agree. I think this has to be unacceptable for Penn State. This is not the caliber of program that they should be. And we've piled on for them. This game for Ohio State, I'll throw it to you in a second. For me personally, this doesn't really change how I view Ohio State because this felt so much more about Penn State. I think Ohio State still has a lot of things to worry about. This is the second really big, big test they've had against a top 10 or top 5 team, one on the road in Eugene, one on the road in Happy Valley, and both times Will Howard has not come up in big moments like you needed him to. The offensive line, the injuries are a huge concern. So I don't feel any different about Ohio State going into this than I do coming out.
The one area where I would disagree with you was the way that offensive line, that makeshift offensive line was able to play, really impressed me. Outside of that, I would definitely agree with you. But that was the one thing where I was like, okay, if they can do this with this O-line, that's a better version of Ohio State. But that's really all I took away from it. They play pretty sloppy. They turned the ball over multiple times. Just things you cannot do in top five matchups unless you're playing Penn State, because they will find a way to lose.
Okay, let's hop to the number one team in the country, Oregon.
Real quick, did Penn State out lose Ohio State in that game?
Is that how we have to start phrasing Ohio State performances in big games now? Or Penn
State? No, that's how Penn State, yeah, Penn State performances.
They just out-lose.
Did they out-lose their opponent? Because Ohio State played, I mean, they made some really big plays in the red zone.
It was a B game for Ohio State.
No, it was less than that. It was a C-plus game for Ohio State. But, yeah.
And you still couldn't take advantage. That's absolutely wild. I would be smashing my head against a brick wall if I was a Penn State fan. But okay, let's hop over to Oregon. They go into the Big House. They handle Michigan 38-17. Typically, when we bring up Michigan games, we talk about Michigan because that's who we focus on as fans of the team. Michigan is more and more becoming a team we don't need to talk about so much. And Oregon is becoming the team that we thought they had the potential to be coming into this year. Oregon is on another level, and Dylan Gabriel is leading that ship. He is playing absolute lights out football from the quarterback position. It just looks so easy for him. He is out there executing that offense at an extremely high level, being very mobile and agile in the pocket. He's great about moving out and keeping his eyes downfield and being very choosy on when he uses his legs to pick up first downs. And he actually had a rushing touchdown in this game. I don't think I could be higher on the way Oregon's playing football right now.
No, not much to add to it. It was a pretty dominant performance by Oregon. I think Michigan actually played close to as well as they are capable of playing. And it still was almost no contest for Oregon. And right now, they're the number one team in the country, and I think they're very deserving of it. I think they are currently, for me at least, the favorite to win the national championship. They have everything, and they have so much speed at every position. And their offense is high-flying, and, you know, they're the best team in the country right now. There's not much more to say about it. I'm going to give them their flowers because they're really, really good. And it's time to start paying attention and talking about them as the prohibitive favorites to not only win the Big Ten, because they already won that matchup against Ohio State, but to win the entire thing.
The last time I checked the odds, Oregon and Ohio State were the top two teams in terms of odds to win the whole thing. And Oregon was number one. I don't know if that's still the case, but
I would take Georgia over Ohio State in a heartbeat right now.
I think Georgia has a quarterback turnover problem in Carson Beck. He just can't stop throwing interceptions, but that's neither here nor there. If we do shift this conversation to Michigan for a second, I know a lot of people had issues with the play calling in this game, specifically on that key fourth down in the red zone that they needed to score to make it a one score game. And they didn't on a trick play. I'm going to say something that might be a hot take from the Michigan fans. I have kind of made a 180 on this offensive coaching staff. I think the past three games for Michigan have been the best coached games of the year, specifically offensively. I'm still not a fan of what Wink Martindale is doing. I think their performance on third down is horrendous, and there's no excuse for it. But I think offensively, the staff has done an incredible job adjusting mid-season and getting this team playing the best football that they have all season. And that's all that you can ask, right? Like that your team plays the better football the longer the season goes on.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, for me at least, it's a lost season at this point. And you're losing so much talent in the offseason that it's really hard to imagine what the roster construction is going to look like next year. There's going to be a lot of transfers, and there's going to be a lot of guys playing that we do not know their names right now. So that's a big thing for me. Wink Martindale is the worst possible coach I could think of to coach this Michigan defense from the perspective of they are built to rush the passer with four guys. They've got Stewart on the outside, and they have two of the best interior defensive linemen in the country, if not the two best interior defensive linemen in the country, both still projected to be first-round picks. And then they've got Josiah Stewart on the outside. They are meant to be a team that covers you on third down and gets to the quarterback with four guys. And his system just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. With the way their roster is constructed, it does not work. And I don't think it's a very good system to begin with. So I'm with you on the Wink Martindale thing. He needs to be one and done. Will he be? Probably not. But that's TBD. Michigan's got a long way to go as far as roster construction and everything. The recruiting trail is looking good. It's looking better and better. The more flips that they get, obviously Bryce Underwood is still kind of up in the air. A lot of rumors going around there, but nothing, you know, concrete yet. It's concerning. I do agree with you that their coaching has been much improved over the last three games. I give a lot of that credit to Sherrone Moore. I think he's kind of settling in a little bit. Not so much the coordinators. I'm not in love with either end of the coordinating right now, but we'll see. We'll see how the season closes out. I think they're only going to win one more game. I think they're only going to beat Northwestern, but we shall see. There's a reason that they play the games on Saturday.
I think it's worth noting too, Oregon has a three-headed monster in the two first names department. They are obviously led by Dylan Gabriel. Their starting running back is Jordan James, and one of their best offensive weapons is Evan Stewart. Is there something to that? I mean,
yes. There is something to it. Everybody start giving your kids multiple first names and they'll be the best football player in the country or one of the. There you go.
I think I might need to change my last name if that's the case. Indiana crushes Michigan State 47-10. I think I picked Indiana in this one. I actually can't remember. But I remember us talking about this potentially being the spot where Indiana's going to come back down to earth here. Michigan State's going to cover. This is going to be a close game. Couldn't be farther from the truth. Rourke came back in this
team. I think all three of us picked Indiana. I think it was a Big Banter Super Lock.
Did we all pick Indiana?
Yeah.
Then I'm just living in La La Land. We're all
geniuses. Well, I made the point. No, I made the point. I started off by capping the game by saying, you know, they're undefeated against the spread. That's not going to continue forever. And, you know, they're going to have games where they struggle to win and blah, blah, blah. I made all those different points. And then I said, but it ain't going to be this week. I'm taking Indiana.
Okay. That must be what I'm thinking of. Cause Rourke came in here through for four touchdowns. They held Michigan State to, let's see, 193 total yards of offense. I think people are giving so much credit to the IU offense that they're not talking about how this defense is performing right now. They are not allowing a lot of points to anybody. These are the point totals that Indiana's defense has allowed. And we get the schedule is not full of juggernauts, but listen to this. These are the point totals they've allowed since week one, 7, 3, 13, 14, 28, 24, 7, 17, and 10. Only twice has a team scored more than 20 on them. That's elite level production no matter who you're playing.
I think I saw that. Aren't they their top 10 in both scoring offense and scoring defense?
I'll pull it up right now.
Yeah. I believe I saw that stat because the committee was talking about how they're being disrespected and blah blah blah.
They are number two in scoring offense right now,
mm-hmm.
at 46.6 points per game.
Okay.
And they are number 7 in scoring defense at 13.6.
Yeah. Top 10 in both. Imagine an SEC team being top 10 in scoring defense and scoring offense and being 9-0 and being ranked 9th in the country. I want you to picture that, because that is picturing something that would never happen.
I hate these stupid people in that room. There's no reason for Indiana or
in the Big Ten. The Big Ten representatives are feckless, and they don't cause a ruckus like the SEC people would.
And guess who? And guess who the chairman of the College Football Playoff Committee is? Ward Manuel, the worst athletic director in the country, the athletic director for the University of Michigan. If anyone who's listening doesn't know,
he did hire Dusty May.
He hired Dusty May, that's true.
But that was after he hired Juwan Howard. So that's a wash.
It's not
a wash. It's not a wash. You hired Juwan Howard. That is the biggest L. You went from John Beilein to Juwan. I'm not going down the rabbit hole. I'm not going to do it.
If no one on here knows what we're talking about, it's also college basketball season. And due to Michigan's performance on the football field, we are all fully bought into the Dusty May era at Chrysler Center in Ann Arbor.
And by Michigan. We all, he means him and Corey. You are not lumping me into that.
Oh, I'm feeling Dusty. I'm feeling Dusty. I need to be claimed.
They beat Cleveland State by 50 points.
They scored 100 and shot 68% from the field.
Yeah, well, great. They did the most unsustainable thing a team could possibly do. So let's see when they actually start playing some real teams.
We're
57 minutes in and we haven't even started the picks. Let's go.
Okay. UCLA beats Nebraska 27-20. Nebraska, once again, with a bowl game on the line, cannot close the deal. And don't look now, but UCLA is kind of playing good football.
Yeah, UCLA... I'm a little bit sorry for the way I talked about you earlier in the season. You're still not good, but you're getting better, and they have a young team with a young core. So if they can keep them together, maybe next year they can make a little bit of noise. So
and they are not the worst team in the Big Ten.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Coach Matt Rhule, so far in his Nebraska tenure, 0-5 in November and 0-7 in games with a chance to go to a bowl.
Yeah. This is crazy, but
he's cursed. He's cursed. It's Nebraska. It's not him.
Yeah. He's one more bad season away. He gets next year for sure. Like he will be the coach next year.
I think
they're bad. With Dylan Raiola being a sophomore, if they're bad next year, if they don't go out and just absolutely smash the portal, you're going to be talking about a team. You're going to be talking about a team that has perceived to be one of the best college football recruits at quarterback, number one guy, blah 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 blah. Yeah, well, that mini Patrick Mahomes act didn't last very long for Dylan Raiola, and he's making lots of mistakes back there. So, played his best game against Ohio State, but it's getting bad for Nebraska, but it hasn't reached any sort of like critical mass or anything like that. So it's not something we need to dive super deep into.
Minnesota beats Illinois 25-17. Hey, your boy PJ Fleck is on a 1-2-3-4 game winning streak. Do you have anything to say?
I told you if I pick them, that's why I picked them last week. I said I pick them, I'm right, and then I'm happy because I get the win. Or if they lose, I just get to rag on PJ Fleck. So it was a win-win situation for me. We're keeping it at that. In all seriousness, they are doing a much better job. They're doing a much better job. And you know what? Defensively, they're making plays. And their offense actually looks as though it's firing on, I won't say all cylinders, but offensively, they look as though they have a pulse.
They do. Absolutely, they do. And I could
if they played Michigan right now, if they played Michigan right now, I would pick them to win.
That must have tasted like vinegar coming out of your mouth.
No, it didn't. Because all
what
I can
did it,
taste
what
is,
did it taste like?
All I can taste is the 2023 national championship.
What does it taste like?
It tastes like PJ Fleck is trying to earn some semblance of respect back from me, and that is still very much TBD with what they do with the rest of this season.
Really? The 2023 national championship tastes like Buckeye conspiracy theories to me. Different.
Okay.
Different taste buds, I guess.
Yes.
Spartan and Buckeye tears, just a mixture of that on my tongue. Okay. Northwestern beats Purdue 26-20. Now we can talk about the worst team of the Big Ten, because that's the Purdue Boilermakers.
We're not going to talk about it. What's his name is in danger of getting himself fired two seasons into his tenure.
Yeah, this does not look good at all. Okay, let's move on. Iowa 42, Wisconsin 10. Iowa, did they find themselves a quarterback? Because also quarterbacks wearing the number one, sick, which Brendan Sullivan is doing. He went 7-for-10, 93 yards and a touchdown, no interceptions. And he also ran the ball 9 times for 58 yards and a touchdown. Now that is something that you wouldn't see Cade McNamara do on his best day.
Yeah, and Cade McNamara won't see the field ever again. unless he gets injured. So, yeah, I mean, Iowa, too bad they didn't figure this out earlier, or they could have made some waves. But it's too late. Yeah, it's too late for that now.
And people are not talking enough about the season that Caleb Johnson is having at running back at Iowa. In this game, he ran for 135 yards.
He's a top five. Oh, I'm so sorry. It glitched like your thing.
You're good. He ran for 135 yards in this game, 3 touchdowns. He is second in rushing yards on the season, only to Ashton Gentry at Boise State.
He's a top 3 running back in the country.
Easily.
He's a top 3 running back in the country. It's Gentry at number 1 by, I mean, the widest of wide margins that have ever widened. But there's an argument to be made that you could say he's number 2. There truly is.
There is an argument. Absolutely. Now let's get to, we can't spend too much time. Like you said, we're already at 1:03. But USC loses to Washington 26-21. USC is now, what's their record? They are now 4-5 at risk of not making a bowl game.
We're gonna take a second on it because
have to.
It's time to start talking about Lincoln Riley leaving USC via firing squad. I mean, the man has accomplished less than nothing.
Literally.
Less than with rosters that were perceived to be elite when Caleb Williams was there. And their defense was so bad, they couldn't win anything. And they're bad on both sides of the ball now. They're not good at anything they do. And I mean, if they miss a bowl game, he should be fired.
Is he solely reliant on having an NFL quarterback to have success? Because this is the first
time. He wasn't good when he did have him.
No, that's true. I guess that was really only the case at Oklahoma.
Yeah. He had Caleb Williams at Oklahoma.
He also had Kyler and Baker and Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. Yeah. He had unbelievable quarterbacks and a very good defensive coordinator. And I mean, they still gave up points, those teams did, at Oklahoma.
A ton. Yeah. Yeah.
They still gave up points. And they just relied on, we are just going to out-offense the crap out of you. First of all, no one outside of Ohio State having success with it for a brief period of time has ever been able to do that in the Big Ten.
Right, yeah.
Ohio State did it for, and Ohio State always had complementary defense at minimum.
Right.
But outside of that, that's the outlier. The rule is you must have defense to play Big Ten football. That's the rule. And USC is certainly not the exception to the rule. And Lincoln Riley is, his seat is scalding right now.
He has to win. He has to win two of these games in order to make a bowl game. He has to beat Nebraska at home. He has to beat UCLA at UCLA, and he has to beat Notre Dame at home. Two of those he has to win in order to make a bowl game.
No, not happening. Not happening. They're going to lose to UCLA, and they're going to lose to Notre Dame.
If he misses a bowl, should that be
automatic? Yeah, yeah, he's fired.
I wonder what that buyout is. That's going to be pricey.
Yep, but it's USC, and they print money.
You got that right. Okay. Those were last week's games. The picks from last week. Ethan and I, we did not steer you wrong. We both went 5-3. Corey, on the other hand, steered you like Michael Scott when he refused to listen to the GPS and drove right into a lake. Corey was 3-5.
No, when he did listen to the GPS.
Oh, he did. That's right.
He did listen to the GPS, and it drove him into a lake.
Correct. Yeah. Whoever Corey's listening to, not giving him good directions. So the picks right now, Ethan is, God, this record. You are 49-34.
Let's go.
That's insanity.
If you have bet my picks, you would be up a large sum of money.
You would be up a large sum of money. I have just crept above over 500 again, so I'm 53-52. Corey, he's 41-49. Poor Seth.
The poor guy. The poor guy.
Couldn't happen to a better guy.
You know, we have to stay at his house this weekend.
We are staying at his house this weekend. You're right. That is true. But I mean, I'm sleeping on an air mattress. It's not like he's laying out the red carpet for us.
That's true.
Okay. We had to get some picks. Can you give me the spreads on these?
I cannot because I'm recording from my phone.
You gosh dang moron. Holy crap. Okay.
Can you please tell me how you actually feel? I don't want you to hold back.
Don't worry. I'll do all the work. I'll do all the work for us. Okay. If you hear clicking noises in the background, I apologize. I have to type and have my microphone on and look at these spreads. I live a very hard life. Okay. We have, this is a Friday game. Iowa is traveling to UCLA. Oh, Jesus. I hate having to freaking type and do this at the same time. Okay. Oh, wait a second. Can you? No, never mind. I'm not going to ask you to do that. All right. Iowa at UCLA. Iowa on the road is a 6.5-point favorite. I'll let you stew. I'll let you think. And go.
I see these cross countries. They just don't ever end up covering. They don't ever end up covering. And it's like, oh my gosh, Iowa should beat them by like so much. These kids are not used to this. They're not used to it. What time is the kickoff? Can you tell me that?
Yep, this is kicking off at 9 p.m.
Oh, give me UCLA. Oh, I'm going to throw up.
Yeah, I'm also taking UCLA. I'm also taking UCLA. That is just... That's a gross set of
circumstances. 9 p.m. kick on the opposite side of the planet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, I just can't do it. I want to take, every fiber of my being wants to take Iowa because they're so much better than UCLA. But It just, I just can't. If there's going to be some way, somehow, they're going to be in the fourth quarter and it's going to be a 3-point game. And you're going to be like, what am I watching? Except yep, you won't be watching this game because it starts at 9 p.m. on Saturday. So,
correct. I'll be in bed by the time the first quarter's over.
Yeah, exactly.
Next game up, Michigan at Indiana. Indiana is a 14-point favorite at home. I'm going to take IU in this one. I know, like we said, they're undefeated against the spread, and that's not going to last forever. But Michigan has proved to be a much worse team on the road than at home this year. And because of that, I'm going with Indiana.
This spread doesn't make any sense to me. And the money is actually coming in, pouring in on IU. Most of the bets are on IU for this game. I mean, I'm disgusted by it and I don't like it, but I'm not taking a super public team that is undefeated against the spread to win in a spot like this. Vegas has the bright shiny lights for a reason. I don't like it at all. I want to take the home favorite here really, really bad, but I'm going to take Michigan plus the points. Ew.
Yeah, that's disgusting. That's absolutely disgusting. Let me type in your pick. Okay. Next.
Imagine one. 9 weeks ago, me telling you Indiana's undefeated and favored by 14 over Michigan.
That's insanity. That's insanity. We're still hoping to go to this game. The reason we're not officially going yet is because we thought these tickets would be much cheaper, but
yeah.
Indiana is elite. Okay, next one. Purdue traveling to Ohio State. Ohio State is a 38-point favorite at home against Purdue. That is a wildly high number.
They're playing – where is it? Where's the game?
It's in the Shoe.
Yeah, I'm going to take Ohio State. I'm going to take Ohio State. I'm going to punt the points.
Are you really?
Yeah, Purdue just has lost themselves completely, and the quit factor is definitely there. Also, a little bit of a get-right spot. I know they played a huge game last week on the road, but Ryan Day cannot be happy with the way those kids played. So I think they're going to be coming off a week of practice where they were kind of getting the whip cracked on them. I think this is going to be a blow-up spot for Ohio State where they just score and score and score and score. I'll take Ohio State minus points.
I'm going to take Purdue. It's just too high of a number. Like, this game could easily be 42-7 and Purdue covers, and it's still never, ever a game. So I'm going to take Purdue plus 38 there. Minnesota traveling to Rutgers. Minnesota on the road at Rutgers is a 6-point favorite. These are two teams we felt wildly different about early in the season compared to how we do now. Minnesota minus 6. I don't love a road favorite to win by at least a touchdown. If this was, yeah, I'm going to take Rutgers plus 6 here.
Oh, see, I want to take Rutgers too. I feel like the give up is real for them, and PJ Flex got his guys playing some hard football. Oh,
he does. You're not wrong. They are rowing furiously.
Give me the boat rowers with a bullet.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Next one, Maryland travels to Oregon. Oregon is minus 25 at home. This game kicks off at 7 p.m.
Oregon by a million.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same. I'm taking the Ducks to absolutely annihilate Maryland in this one. Okay, last game of the week on Peacock. It's going to be a whiteout. It's a night game at Penn State. Washington, the Huskies are going to Happy Valley. Penn State is a 13.5-point favorite. This is a whiteout. Washington has been much worse on the road than they have been at home this year. So give me Penn State to cover and win by 2 touchdowns.
I hate this number. Let me just make that very clear, because it feels so easy to take Penn State in this spot. Oh, light out at night. Nobody's going to be taking Washington in this game. Nobody. I have to be the one to do it. It's so disgusting. And I hate it. Man, I hate the picks this week. I really dislike them a lot. But
I'm going to make Penn State my lock.
I haven't heard anything so far that I'm like, well, I guess. See, but Oregon being that heavy of a favorite, I can't make that a lock.
Right, yeah.
But
what about Minnesota? What about Minnesota? Minus 6 on the road. Is that a lock?
No.
Michigan.
Ohio State minus 38 against Purdue. They're gonna ransack that team. Okay. They're gonna absolutely obliterate. Wait, what is Oregon at home?
Oregon's at home, yep.
And they're a how much point favorite?
25.
Okay, see, I like that too.
You like the big favorites this week.
Yeah. Yeah, Maryland having to travel across country to go get eviscerated that's my lock of the week.
Okay.
That should be everybody. That should be your lock of the week too. Let me make that very clear.
It should be my lock of the week. I did pick Oregon. I did pick Oregon. It should be
my lock. Oregon's going to be my lock of the week.
Penn State's mine. Okay. Anything else?
I'm just so happy for anybody who's out there listening. I'm just so grateful for them. I'll kiss them on the mouth. That's for my wife, because she listens.
What if other people's wives are listening?
I won't kiss them on the mouth.
What if...
That's for invitation to my wife only. Okay. Go ahead, say it. What if what? Say it.
What about all the single guys out there who are listening?
Well...
What if Corey has to edit this? He's a single guy listening. Actually, never mind. No, I take that back. He just shared this information with me that apparently he told you for a while.
We'll see. We'll see. Well, he's definitely going to edit this out now. That's for sure.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening. Have a great game day. We'll talk to you next week.